what is happening inside Privat, and when it became especially important when the war started.
At the beginning of the war, they were not very well protected. They never read management books, and I don't recommend it.
What was the last time you used cash?
We executed the big transfer, lift and shift, I think in less than 2 months. Again, something I never saw in my life.
The most complex and difficult thing is to create something simple and transparent.
Learn Ukrainian language immediately.
Доброго дня! Це Віра Платонова. І після літньої перерви ми повертаємо нашу серію інтерв'ю «Точка без контакту». Хочу нагадати, що це суспільний проєкт «Visa» та «Forbes», у рамках якого я беру інтерв'ю у топ-менеджерів великого українського бізнесу. І ми обговорюємо, які зараз стратегічні рішення приймає наш бізнес, як працює команда, як приймаються важкі рішення та які перспективи ми бачимо у майбутньому. І це наше перше інтерв'ю англійською мовою. Наш гість сьогодні – Герхард Бьош, голова правління Приватбанку.
Точка без контакту. Інтерв'ю з провідними топ-менеджерами українських компаній. Про виклики, ризики, лідерство та роботу на перемогу. З Вірою Платоновою.
Герхард, hi. It's a great pleasure to see you today and thank you so much for your interview. And my first question is that you are already in banking for more than 35 years. So could you please tell us, was it your decision from the very beginning and how you came to this profession eventually?
Well, indeed, you could call me a veteran banker. How shall I say, unfortunately. The fact that I became a banker was a bit of a coincidence. I was trained as an economist at university and I didn't know anything about banking. And the reason why I got a job in a bank was they were looking for a macroeconomist in a research department. That was the first step. And then I got immediately hooked and it never let me go again.
I don't know any person who strategically decided to become a banker. It is always a coincidence, the same with me.
Gerhard Bjosh, 65, an Austrian banker and the chairman of the management board at Privatbank. Mr. Bjosh is a veteran banker of 35 years and has served as a banking executive in Ukraine for more than 15 years. His knowledge of the Ukrainian and European banking system is extensive. He has successfully led large banking transformation projects, including privatization initiatives.
Okay, so you live in Ukraine already more than 15 years. And you're working here as well in a number of banks. So could you call Ukraine your second home? And what are the main cultural differences you're still struggling with or you cannot get used to?
Well, that's a good question. After more than 17 years already, I have to say Kyiv is my first home. Without any doubt. And regarding the second question, I would say I'm struggling more with some of the Austrian realities than with any cultural features of Ukraine. So I'm now well onboarded, if I may say so.
And definitely you spend most of your time in Ukraine, right?
I spend practically all of my time in Ukraine, yes.
So let's move to your work in Privatbank as a CEO. So this is already 2 years, right? You are appointed and it happened before the war. And when you started your work in Privatbank, you actually, and we have a little bit of preparation, you identified a number of priorities or strategic priorities, how the bank will evolve and in which direction. The first one was improving lending capacity. Second, creating new operation model for the entire bank. And last but not least, definitely focusing more on IT. So after these 2 years and everything which is happening, where are we, where are you as a bank to reach these goals, and how did the core priorities change over the time?
Yes, let's put this question a bit into context. At the same time when I started to work here, the CMU, the government, approved the official strategy of the bank. And the strategic targets, the priorities of the bank was to be ready for privatization in 2024, to be or become or stay the leading bank in retail and SME, to be operationally efficient and stable, and last but not least, very important for our direct shareholder, the MinFin, to be very profitable and pay a big amount of dividends. Now, of course, since the war started, some of these priorities have changed a little bit, others not so much. There is certainly, without any doubt, we don't have a clear, let's say, timeline anymore for privatization. However, privatization readiness is still one of our primary targets, although we don't know exactly when it will happen. Well, and then the war, of course, quite dramatically changed the competitive situation in the country. Most of the private banks, and especially the Western-owned banks, had to reduce their risk appetite quite significantly. We were fortunately in the position, with the support of our shareholder, to do the opposite. Our prime target during the war, it was and still is, to support the economy. So we were growing market share and coverage in all our target customer segments. And this was even easier than before the war, because honestly speaking, there is much less intensity in competition. However, the most important target for us after the 24th of February was to stay operationally stable, just to keep the logistics up, cash logistics, branches, IT, P24 and everything, and to serve our customers wherever, inside and outside of Ukraine, and whenever, 24/7, they need it. And looking back, I think we were quite successful in that. Last but not least, we were also able to pay $52 billion of dividends to the shareholder after the war started. And I think that's also a quite massive contribution of the bank.
Absolutely. We are actually all amazed how Privat performs and have been performing since the war started, and how sustainable the model proved to be, and how efficient you are. And also, if you look at statistics of Central Bank, you continue to grow in market share, in all the parameters, actually. This is a great success and contribution to overall economy and sustainability of Ukraine during the war. So you have now more than 20 million clients, like customers, which is unbelievable figure, and is actually an equivalent of the population of a couple of European countries. And could you just tell me, like, maybe top two or top three main challenges in managing this complex, really extremely complex financial institution that Ukraine heavily depends on?
I mean, you're right. We are big. We have a very big physical footprint. Yeah, so we are quite balanced. Privatbank on the one side has always been a leader in innovation, even before the nationalization, for many, many years. And the Privatbank has built up a customer franchise, which is quite unique, I think, in Eastern Europe. I'm not aware that in any other countries one bank has been so successful in conquering the market and keeping and defending this market share, and even now further increasing the market position. I think that is, let's say, the secret of the success of Privatbank. That's the scale we have in customer business. Otherwise, or at, let me say, at the same time, I mean, we have challenges, yeah, due to the environment, and here I mean mainly the war, of course. But in reality, the bank is much less complex than you might believe from the outside. And the reason for that is our focus, more or less full focus, on retail and SME. That means we have nearly only products which are standardized and produced and distributed in mass scale. So we have no big individual tailor-made lending product for large corporates or for multinationals. We don't have a lot of financial derivatives. We don't have a complex trading book. So the bank in reality is quite easy to understand. Everything we do can be automatized, and nearly everything we do is automatized. And that is a very big advantage to nearly all the banks I have seen before, which have indeed been too complex to get this kind of efficiency via automatization. And we plan to keep that on the one side, further expanding the customer base, but still focus on standardized products and also standardized distribution channels.
You know, like, the most complex and difficult thing is to create something simple and transparent. And that's great to hear what you're saying, that you almost reached this goal. So let's move to the topic of communication inside the bank. So 22,000 employees, which is like unbelievable figure, more than in, I think, most of European banks, and actually globally. In Visa, in my part, which I'm managing, we have around 250 people. And to be frank, I struggle, and it's quite complicated to communicate to all of them permanently, effectively. So what practices or instruments you use to communicate with this 22,000 to make sure that they understand the goals and they understand the priorities on permanent basis? I just need some tips from you here.
Yeah, I think there's nothing like a perfect communication in a big organization or in a medium-sized organization. And we permanently also discuss and improve and try new things. We, for example, when the war started, I think we had 3 or 4 daily meetings with all our regional directors, all 12 of them, in all oblasts, with all board members and other key top managers of the bank. So the first one, I think, at 7 o'clock in the morning, then later in the morning, the afternoon, and the evening, just to make sure that we know what's going on, and that the regional director also have a chance to directly inform us and talk to us. Of course, that is became then a bit less intensive after the whole situation stabilized more or less. But I think that is still, I guess, the most powerful communication channel, at least for a limited or rather small group of people. You cannot physically directly communicate with 200 people every day, but you can do it with 25. That turned out to work very well. Now, what we are doing, we are using Telegram channels, we are using P24, we are using emails, hot messaging. We have campaigns from time to time where we instruct all people in the head offices, but also in the branches, how to observe security rules, go to the shelter, what to do with customers in an air alarm. And we repeatedly, of course, need to instruct people to be cautious and really follow those instructions. And I have to say, and we have now more recently again started with more in-person meetings. So we had town halls in a hybrid format where people came to the office, and at the same time we transmitted this via YouTube channels to all employees who were unable to come to Kiev, of course. And there are more and more also in-person workshop where IT people come together, operations people come together, business come together, and many of them see each other for the first time since the war started. Yeah, this is quite then also quite emotional events. Yeah? And people love it very much that at least there is, in a limited way, it's again possible to travel and to meet and see each other.
Yeah? That's true. I understand what you're saying. Also, sometimes meet, and it's difficult to recognize each other in real world. So moving to people, so 22,000 employees, and I'm sure that Privat has a good foundation how to support these people during the war, especially those who are joining or joined armed force of Ukraine. So tell us a little bit how you support people, what social program you have, and what is on your priority list here. Does the bank currently have all necessary resources? Because definitely a lot of men enlist to army.
Yeah. I just wanted to start with the resources. We, of course, have no issues with financial resources. We can afford to do what is necessary. But it's not only about financial resources. Yeah, so we are able so far also to explain to the authorities which resources, which critical resources we need to keep in the bank to be able to continue to work without any interruptions. And that communication, I think, works pretty well. Now, in the first quarters of the war, we were, I think, quite active, of course, like many other big institutions, to help our people who were dislocated, internally displaced people in Ukraine, or also refugees. We helped with bus transport. We helped with financial aid. Housing apartments were destroyed. And of course, we also helped with financial aid if something much worse is happening. To the families. What we are now very much focused on, that's more on the future, towards the future, in expectation of a lot of veterans coming back after the war, coming back to the workforce, coming back with probably different kind of traumas. We are preparing ourselves to onboard not only the colleagues who went to fight and are currently serving in uniform and who will come back, but also other people. This will be a challenge for the whole country, I think. And we are also already quite intensively preparing ourselves, creating mentorship and infrastructure, how then to help these people to reintegrate into civil life.
So let's move a little bit to business. So despite the war, Privat is moving very fast in growing customer base and building new solutions for consumers. So what are the products or services Privat is now focused or most interested in? So we work together, for example, on tap-to-phone technology to enable acceptance in each smallest city of Ukraine. Privat 24 is permanently improving. So please, Gerhard, tell us a little bit on what's worrying you right now in terms of technologies.
Yeah, let me. I think that is the core of our task, and I can say, after having worked in 7 different banks abroad and in Ukraine, which were privately owned, so the commercial orientation and competitiveness of Privat Bank's employee are definitely top of what I have ever seen in my professional experience and my professional life. In spite of being state-owned for more than 6 years, or nearly 7 years, so the DNA of the bank is still very, very, very competitive. Which means in practice, of course, and nobody will be surprised to hear that, the trend is continuing towards mobile banking application services in banking and in all other service industries as well. That trend, I think, is unstoppable, and that will take a lot of our, let's say, investment budget, but also of our attention. However, I would also like to say we are fully aware that we have millions of customers, mainly pensioners, who depend also on our physical footprint and our availability and accessibility in all parts of Ukraine. We have branches, ATM network and terminals, and we are not planning to reduce that footprint. So we continue to have both a very massive physical presence. But that is not something, of course, which we will very much increase. But and therefore, the big investments and the attention will go into mobile services and products. And here, I think since many of the basic transactional services are already quite standardized, we do expect a bit more price competition, even in Ukraine, to come. And we expect that, let's say, convenience and accessibility or the sexiness of the product, the custom experience and everything which belongs to that will be key to distinguish, and for customers to decide with whom they do banking. And that is, something where, I think I don't want to say the best because we have good people everywhere, but what is real, what we are obsessed with. And
yeah,
where you and you probably are quite close to what we are developing, because in many cases we are doing things together with you. But we will also very soon start to surprise and impress our competitors and hopefully also the customer base.
Wow, interesting. So you're continuing to innovate. And yes, we do a lot of stuff together. And I think what is important for us in this partnership, that it's not only like we are heavily trying to activate existing customer base and help Ukrainians in Ukraine, but also Ukrainians who are now out from the country temporarily, but also trying to educate these elderly people to move from face-to-face to digital, still keeping face-to-face. It's very important. And there is a progress for sure. I see it on my mom, who started using Privat24 also for payments. When we talk about innovations, I think it's important to say that it's not only like client-facing, customer-facing, but also what is happening inside Privat. And when it became especially important when the war started, the question of security, like even physical security of processing center, of data, of everything, which actually guarantees complete interoperability and stable work of the bank. And I'm really proud to say that Privat was the first bank in CEMEA and one of the first globally who switched to Visa Cloud. It's called Visa Cloud Connect, meaning storing the data related to payment transactions in the cloud. And that was completely new way of securely connections to VisaNet, to Visa Core. Another important thing that we didn't have a lot of time. So it happened like through the first like weeks after the invasion, which usually takes months. So that your team worked like unbelievably fast. So could you please tell us a little bit how you believe this migration to cloud, Visa Cloud, and overall help to securely operate the bank, and what is the status right now?
Let me say I was surprised to read that we were not only the first one in Ukraine, but the first one in CMEA. Yeah, interestingly. Now, for us it was pretty clear on the morning of the 24th of February 2022 that by far our biggest vulnerability would be our two big data centers, physical data centers, the very big one, very, very close to the airport in Dnipro, The second one, the backup data center in Kyiv, both could have been, it didn't happen, but it was a big risk, destroyed quite easily. At that time, at the beginning of the war, they were not very well protected by air defenses, I think we all remember. And indeed, the decision to try to go to the cloud immediately was taken in the first 2 or 3 days, when some of our key stakeholders in that project, the IT people, were literally stuck in their cars waiting for the border crossing. And in these many, many hours, when they were stuck in the cars, we already were preparing this project. So what usually would take, just to formalize the decision in the bank to do it, to prepare all the analysis, to go to the supervisory board, that preparation would probably take 6 months normally. That was taken, I think, in 72 hours. And on the day when the National Bank then allowed us to go abroad with our data and with the processing, I think that was end of the first week in March, we were already ready to really fully launch the project. What I wanted to say that we really made this decision to do this huge project within very few hours or very few days. Then at the day when the National Bank officially gave green light to go abroad with data and processing, I think that was end of the first week or beginning of the second week in March, we were ready to really fully launch the project. We executed the big transfer, what we called, lift and shift, I think in less than 2 months. Again, something I never saw in my life. Yeah, usually would expect something like this, 12 months, 18 months. But of course, for us, knowing that every day our physical data center could have been destroyed, time was absolutely of the essence. And we did things which you usually in a project are not allowed to do. Yeah, so we really cut corners and made these things happen without always too much testing and things like that. Now, and we are still optimizing, and what we find out now, interestingly, is that the fact that we are now in this Amazon environment allows us also to massively modernize our IT architecture and to use hardware much more efficiently than we did in the past. So we are really learning a lot, and our IT people are learning a lot. And all together, I think this, without having planned for it, turned out to be an opportunity in the long term for the bank.
Exactly, an opportunity. I'm sure Ukrainian banks are now the most stable and prepared for everything in the world, like globally. And the question which I also wanted to touch, Gerhard, what about cyber attacks? Have you experienced cyber attacks during this period or now? And how the bank withstand cyber attacks?
Well, we had the biggest cyber attack, I think the week, you might remember that, the week before the war started, when we were attacked, but I think also the Ministry of Defense and some other big important institutions. That was obviously already done by Russian state actors. This was the biggest we ever experienced in the past. And I think after, 45 minutes or 60 minutes, everything we were able to stabilize. It didn't have the impact, which was, of course, expected by the adversaries. Since then, as a bank of our size, we have permanent cyber attacks every single day, already before the war. We see that continuing. We see from time to time also much more massive DDoS attacks, which we still believe are somehow in connection with Russia, but nothing as big as in the week before the war, and nothing which interrupted our services at all. So, knock on wood, but so far so good in this respect.
Yeah, it's great that we are in good shape here. I know that working for Privat always been and is like one of the most exciting jobs, because like Privat Bank being from one perspective traditional bank, state-owned bank, at the same time remains fintech, because all the time you innovate, you like introduce new things and surprise clients and customers. So like that's why my question is maybe from your strategic perspective, yes? So the world, financial world is changing, especially last couple of years, so fast. New technologies, tokenization, Face ID, everything in the phone, and it's further like evolving in this direction. Different competition also from non-standard client partners, neobanks, and a lot of demand from consumer, because now like consumer is first and client experience is first. What do you think are like the most important trends right now, and what of these strategic priorities define the future path of Privat and overall the industry?
I agree. I think this is probably the biggest challenge for the management of an institution like ours. Yeah, to get these things right, yeah, to be alert and open, but not necessarily to do everything at the same time, but also to select in which areas, which focus and which resources and which capital is invested. Now, from my point of view, and also observing, of course, the appearance of fintech or neobanks already for, I would say, a bit more than 10 years, so my conclusion would be that neobanks and fintechs will not reach world domination. Yeah? But yeah, they play and have played an extremely important role to challenge the big incumbent banks, wake them up and force them to become much more innovative themselves. What I see neobanks very much struggling with in many countries outside of Ukraine is with the fact that as soon as they need full banking license, yeah, they need to comply with the full set of regulatory requirements. And of course, there is a tension, yeah, between the fact that banking is such a heavily regulated industry now everywhere in the whole world, and the attitude to disrupt things by innovative startups. And but you see it, and you see it yourself probably. Yeah, the startups, as soon as they become of a certain size and want to have banking license in more than one jurisdiction, yeah, then life becomes also much more complicated for them. Now, on the other side, I think the bigger banks, and I mean, Privatbank has always been on the forefront of innovation, but what I see also in other countries, the bigger banks indeed have woken up and have become much, much better and more competitive in that area. Now, for the future, where I see, I think the critical challenge where wouldn't call it a battle, yeah, but where the future success might be very much influenced is how to use, how efficiently and in which way to use data and artificial intelligence. That is probably something which everybody would see, everybody in my position would see as a prime challenge and one of the biggest topics for the years to come. I think it's a bit too early to say already who will be the winners and what are the success criteria, but I think that is the area where a lot will be determined, who will be the most successful institutions in the next 10 years. And we are, I think, doing quite a lot, in all modesty. I was surprised when I came to the bank to see in how many areas Privatbank for many years is already using machine learning. Yeah.
Yeah, so artificial intelligence is definitely right now hot topic everywhere, and everybody are thinking how we integrate into business processes, and Privat actually always did it
given, again, coming back to the number of customers we have, the number of transactions we are doing every day, we
no
have a lot
out.
Of data to work with. Yeah,
so you already have here and I'm sure you will be progressing in this. So how do you think how Visa can help you in driving this success and interoperability and stability, but also innovations? What do you expect from international payment systems?
Well, I mean, it's clear you are in a pretty unique position, together with one of your big competitors, of course. You see what is happening pretty much in every corner of the world, right? So, talking to you and communicating and working with you also gives a lot of information to us about what is happening somewhere else where we otherwise would simply have probably no idea what's going on and what might be interesting for us. And I think that is what the cooperation with you makes very interesting for us, to get information from you, what you see happening, and then to develop projects together, or to get sometimes your help to find the right partners to develop something, to co-brand an idea or just a card, and just to be on the forefront of what's happening. And I think we are attractive for you because, again, of our size. Yeah? So we are probably also a preferred customer and partner for you, if I understand that correctly.
We are trying to bring whatever we knew globally to Ukraine and to Privat. It's very challenging because like most innovations are happening here. I'll tell you that even when we have some new things, we try to bring it first. I'm trying to get it and bring first to pilot in Ukraine. And in Privat, it's one of the most innovative markets overall. And everybody knows this globally in Visa. Gerhard, let's talk about Ukraine, about people. So you're here from 2006, and you see the evolution of the society. And I think the most like geometrical progression on evolution we see over the last years of war, right? So tell us a little bit how you see our like society is changing, evolving, and how?
Well, the war now is of course a very special situation, a special challenge in every possible aspect of the world. But the country, I think, has very much developed and changed even before the war. So when I came in 2006, the atmosphere was very different. Conversations with people were different. It felt very, very different from what I was used to in Austria before I came here. Now, I think 15 or 17 years later, I think a new generation has really taken over. A generation of plus minus 40, who might have been born in the Soviet Union, but has not yet been, not been really socialized. And everybody who is, let's say, below 30 has not even consciously experienced all the drama and the chaos and the difficulties of the 90s. And I think culturally, there is absolutely no difference between this younger generation in Ukraine and in Western Europe. Absolutely zero. I don't see it. The same taste in music, literature, movies, and political attitude as well.
Absolutely.
So I am very impressed, really, how fast the country has developed. There is much more to do, but I'm pretty optimistic that after victory, even more dynamic development might take place in, especially given now the very realistic chance of joining the EU. I think that will invigorate a lot of reformers and reforms.
I agree. Our young people, they're really very smart, educated, innovative, thinking different.
Yeah, and talking about the economy, there is a really a very, very big number from very skilled, also younger, let me say, non-oligarchic entrepreneurs. Yeah, and that is also something what we see here, since we are so much focused on smaller companies, micro SME, as you know, we see a lot of things which make me very optimistic for the medium and longer term in Ukraine.
Actually, talking about entrepreneurs and overall business. So before the war, I remember many conversations with different businesses I had when I was saying, like, guys, you need to try to expand to Europe, to other markets. Your like business model is perfect. You give much better client experience than in many countries. But Ukrainians being like probably too modest or conservative to try like their like energy outside of Ukraine. And now that has changed. And we see a number of businesses entering Europe, entering like neighboring markets. So how do you think, like, are we already competitive enough? And what we still, like, as Ukrainian nation and business environment needs to learn to successfully conquer foreign markets?
Yeah. Here I would differentiate a little bit. I mean, for a lot of, let's say, companies who are still rather small, yeah, the Ukrainian market before the war, having up to 40 million domestic potential customers, is already a very, very big market. Yeah? There are at least 10 countries, probably up to 15 countries in Europe, especially on the Balkans, but also Austria and Switzerland, they have less than 10 million. So if you are doing the same business in Slovenia, where you have 3 or 4 million inhabitants, which is a bit more than Kiev, yeah, you reach a level where you need to go abroad to grow, while in Ukraine, yeah, you can grow the business domestically to a bigger size before you really need to go abroad. And of course, going abroad adds complexity. Now, what I see also that, of course, not a lot of Ukrainians in the past had any experience whatsoever about working abroad. That now might also change with millions of Ukrainians living abroad, yeah, and they will also bring back some of their experience, language skills, and other contexts, and that could again be a boost. Yeah. Now, I'm still talking about small business. Now, on the other side, of course, you have the very big agro producers. They are fully focused on export for many, many years. That is probably not what we need to discuss. In the medium level, I think, or smaller corporate level, I think there is much to do. Yeah, I see a huge potential of Ukrainian products, really products, not only services, products being produced here and possibly exported to Europe. That would, of course, become much more easier in the run-up and after EU accession, yeah, because then you suddenly become much more competitive if there are no hurdles for export and import business.
I hope that Ukrainian business will become international. You have one of the most difficult jobs in the country, and you're like ahead of like fighting in the field of economy and banking in parallel with government fighting, the war and fighting everything we have. And you're always so energetic. So how you fight the stress? And I read in one of your previous interviews that you do sports. So has it changed since war started, and how you, where you are taking your energy and the balance? It's so important for managers.
Yeah. So I mean, some of the energy I take just being part of the action here, yeah, and seeing how everybody is working in the bank and outside the bank. That alone also gives me some resilience. Indeed, I would like to do more sports than I do currently. I still go to the gym. I have reduced my outdoor activities, but at least I was able to run a half marathon 2 weeks ago in Kiev successfully, which means I finished it. I didn't win the race, but at least I finished it. So I'm trying to keep more or less fit.
It's unbelievable. You're a role model for me. So many years in Ukraine, and you said this is your first home, and you already feel like Ukrainian. So how these years in Ukraine changed you as a personality? And have you got new qualities that you didn't have before?
I think that would be better if others talk about that. You knew it's a self-assessment.
We will ask them.
You might ask them. I'm not really sure if you change a lot in my age group. Yeah. What I would definitely say, I have learned a lot here. Yeah. But I think personality is probably still the same. But what I see happening here, the experiences I make, looking at how people are really fighting to improve the situation for themselves and for the country, that is what I didn't see before I came to Ukraine. Yeah? So one revolution after the other, and now culminating in this very intensive difficult war with Russia.
So and
I think that is certainly dominating
agree.
The experiences for everybody currently in Ukraine.
To be ready for everything and to adapt to everything, right? What was the last time you used cash? Or maybe there are cases you use it now?
I don't use it very... I always have cash with me.
Okay.
Yeah, 500 hryvnia, 1000 hryvnia. I very seldom use it. Sometimes to give a tip, for example, but I would say 99% I'm not on cash anymore. Yeah.
99% cashless. That's great.
More or less, yeah. and in Ukraine, unlike in Austria, you can pay everywhere cashless. Yeah, you would be surprised on how many places. And even not just small kiosks, you are rejected if you want to pay cashless in Austria.
So, yeah. There are things Europe still need to learn from Ukraine. So, another question. What advice would Gerhard from 2023 give to Gerhard in 2006 when you came, right? Before moving to Ukraine.
Well, the advice would clearly be learn Ukrainian language. Immediately, whatever it takes. Yeah, do that in the beginning. Don't miss the opportunity.
Do you have time to read books or listen podcasts? And if yes, please advise us something.
I would not give advice to, let's say, a general public. Yeah, I would give advice to individuals, knowing them, and then I can be more specific. Indeed, I like to read a little bit less than 20 years ago, unfortunately, but I do like to read. What I don't, and I don't know if this is disappointing, I never read management books. I never read biographies of billionaires or hedge fund founders. I just am not interested and I don't recommend it. I read much more cookbooks than management self-improving literature, honestly speaking. And I have a wide range of podcasters to whom I'm following when time allows it, which is usually.
Just advise us something, your favorite podcast.
My favorite podcast there is I have two let's say group of podcasts. One is has to do with Ukrainian language learning, and the other has to do with classical modern philosophy.
Gerhard, thank you so much.
Thank you, Vera.
It was a great interview.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you so much, and see you soon at the next sessions.
Okay, stay safe. Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye. Шановні глядачі, щиро дякую, що були з нами сьогодні. Я сподіваюся, що вам сподобалось це інтерв'ю, так як і мені. Я закликаю вас підписуватись на наш канал та ставити лайк. І до нових зустрічей у проєкті «Точка без контакту».
«Точка без контакту» – інтерв'ю з провідними топ-менеджерами українських компаній про виклики, ризики, лідерство та роботу на перемогу. З Вірою Платоновою. Дивіться на YouTube та слухайте на Google та Apple Podcasts.